The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blasting the shot. What a goal!
Hello and welcome everyone to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. It's a transfer deadline special. Everybody joining me tonight for this before the window slams shut. I've got the yellow tie, it's Jiffo, and I've got the purple dildo, it's Stu.
All day long.
Genuinely, I had that thought at about 3 a.m. this morning and thought,
Hang on a minute. So you were thinking of me as a purple dildo at 3 a.m? What kind of sick games are you playing, Richard?
A very sleep-deprived one. Because when I should be probably caring for a 7-week-old child, what I'm doing is workshopping intros to a podcast. Because, Stu, you know me too well. You know that's far. That is pretty much on the ball for me.
You know what? I was listening to Help I Sexy My Boss podcast earlier, and they brought something up which, for me, I'm not even going to... It was called igluing. They just look that up, what that is. And for once, I was listening to it at work, and I was shocked. Shocked to the core. And it takes a lot for me to kind of have a raised eyebrow about any kind of weird fetishes, but this is going too far. Igluing. There you go. There's one for the kids.
I was gonna say, because it's lost on me. But to anyone who is listening to this live or I'm back on podcast, feel free to drop a first comment. I'm terrified. Oh, thankfully, it's just Haley. Hi, Stu. Purple dildo sounds about right. Yeah, we're on ball. Make sure if you are watching this on YouTube that you like, share, and subscribe as always. And of course, if you are watching it back as well, make sure you give us all the love in the world. Because, guys, we're talking about this before we jumped on. We are in a bit of a happy mood at the end of a transfer window for once. There's no, I know, air of anger or animosity. We're not getting the pitchforks out, are we? Everything seems a bit happy. And I don't know if it's because yesterday we finally freed João Gomes from his... from his prison, his torturous life being, you know, a star of Brazilian team.
Yeah.
I was trying to work out the best way to open this. Is this the most hype you've ever seen a Wolves, a defensive midfielder get for joining a club?
I mean, Neves was kind of hyped up quite a lot back then, but we were a shit championship club at the time, weren't we? So, and I think it was very much the same scenario that hardly anyone has seen him play, regardless of what they say. In Neves' case, obviously, a couple of people, the saddos who watched European football and Champions League all the time, would have done. But this guy's coming, been mentioned purely on reputation alone and the reaction of some South American journalists. And you think, well, if they're talking about him like this and they're raving about him and this is getting this much attention for a defensive midfielder, then surely the kid's got something about him. And then you look on the obligatory YouTube videos and stuff and think, well, he's getting sent off every week. But I think it's just the circumstances around it. It's everything's all come together in this one. And it's like it's not the statement that Neves was back then, but it's almost a statement of someone wants to come here through choice from Brazil when he could get to France earning more money, potentially get in the Champions League as well. And you think because he gave his word, he's come here. And you think it's just a wonderful story all round. And it's obviously future planning from us, which we never do. So I think it's a mixture of all them things thrown together. It's just a brilliant feeling all round. And going into a transfer deadline day, not ready to explode with rage at sellers and farewell before him, and the Hayfouse and cheapskates and all, it's all gone. It's all different. It's an odd feeling, like you said, Rich.
Yeah, and I mean, particularly on sort of João Gomez to start with. Jafot, does he, and again, we can't falling into football cliches categories here. Is he classed as a wonder kid?
I mean, yeah, probably. I mean,
I know he's technically 21, but
he's hanging in there, isn't he? He's hanging in there. He's kind of like, and I probably mentioned this before, he's like one of those where he's at the prime value for like when Brazilian league clubs want to sell players into Europe. I mean, if he'd have stopped in Brazil anymore, he'd have started losing value. But from, like Stu says, as like what people say is true, and the hype that he's getting from, you know, the likes of Tim Vickery and some of the other people who are involved in South American football is true, then we've got a bargain on our hands. We feel almost like in this post-Scott Sellers, you know, post-Brexit era as well, when we said we were going to look at South America, that we finally cut the middleman out and got somebody before Benfica or, you know, ahead of Leon in this case, which is refreshing because we're just doing what Brighton have been doing for the past 2 years.
Yeah, it feels like this year, it feels like we've tried to be a lot smarter, and I think it's shown in the signings, how, like, you know, none of them have really been the stereotypical Jorge Mendes carousel of players. When, you know, we all knew Wolves were going to have to invest this transfer window to make sure that we don't go down, and it felt like it could have been really easy to, let's say, get Uncle Jorge on the phone, get his Rolodex out, and get, you know, for Benfica B team or whatever. But it's just felt different. And the fact that they had a couple of swings at trying to get players from South America and it not quite pan out for one reason or another, to then, it feels like, as you were saying, Stu, the Neves one felt like such a big transfer for the club. And I think everyone kind of realised very early on how big it was for the first team, whereas this feels like it's a really big win for the back office in terms of actually being able to get this deal over the line. Because, you know, I think I said on a show a couple of weeks back how they've had this, you know, good idea, as Jafot said, about sort of tapping into South America, scouting proficiently, cutting out the middleman, but then have really struggled with that negotiation side of it to get those transfers over the line for one reason or another. They've kind of got hoodwinked on the by Arsenal for the one player, and you know, they, how much we were actually in for Enzo Fernandez, I don't quite know personally, but they persevered, and you know, they stuck to their guns. And he's right, João Gomez wanted to come to Wolverhampton.
And it was when he bought the trainers as well. That was it for me.
I know. He had me. And like, obviously, you know, it was really sweet to see him with goodbyes, and everyone's really happy for him. And you can't forget that people element sometimes, don't you? And then when, you know, they're literally like, you can always see him going, oh, you're excited. He's like, fuck yeah, I am. These are my colours now. And it's just like, you know what? He's already become a firm fan favourite, despite him never playing for Wolves and barely anyone watching, you know, any of his 86 senior games. but everything I've seen of him and Babacu Traore in the middle of the park.
Boubacar. You called him. You spent the whole episode last week calling him Babacar or Boubacat or whatever.
I usually just go Traore. But
Traore.
I tell you what, a 5-1 both of them to get a booking in a game. Easy printing money, isn't it?
Well, you put them two and Lamina as well.
Yeah, there's
tasty midfield, though, isn't it?
It's tasty, yes. That is the perfect word for it. You know, there's a lot of as soon as again, it's a nickname thing. As soon as you've got a young Brazilian defensive midfielder whose nickname's for Pitbull, you kind of know what you're up against, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's like having an Argentinian player whose nickname's El Loco. He's going to get himself sent off for reckless headbutt. I don't write the rules, Stu. It's just how it is, isn't it? Like,
nature against nurture.
Yeah.
One thing's going to win.
Yeah. You know, it is going to happen. But Wolves have made six, dare I say, really solid signings. For one, which has kind of gone under the radar because it is a bit of an under the radar mess signing, is signing Dan Bentley as essentially backup goalkeeper. And again, there's been a lot of talk about the goalkeeping situation at Wolves because Sarr's been a bit off the boil, whether it's through injury or form or just natural regression from last season. And a lot of talk about Sarr's not necessarily great with his feet. Now, you look at all the shots of Dan Bentley and all the clips I've seen, he's always in a short goalkeeping shirt. Now, stick with me here. I think to wear a short goalkeeping shirt, you automatically have to be good with your feet.
Didn't Rui Patricio?
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah, we know how that played out.
Let me kind of rewind.
You were underwhelmed, weren't you, yeah, Stu, to be honest? I think
my main point about it, well, I mean, as a keeper, shot stopper, no problem whatsoever, fantastic. Seen him a few times, and like the one that Illy keeps talking about in all the videos of him so far, when he was at Brentford and we battered him, and he had no chance. But he's commanding enough. He doesn't seem to drop that many bollocks, really. But if the main objective was to get a keeper in who's good with his feet, I don't see that in him, really. I know that it's Bristol City, and obviously they're not going to be playing like that all the time anyway. And they've obviously got something about them to bring this guy in. But I don't think there's much of a difference between him and Ruddy from that point of view. And it kind of makes you think, well, if Bruno hadn't been a complete arsehole to everyone, and Ruddy had stayed, would this have happened? Because that's the kind of, I mean, how was he about the same age when he joined anyway? Before it came, he had to, obviously what happened to him, and he had to play for, he was first choice automatically, by default almost. It seems very similar to that, where he's an English goalkeeper who's not the best in the world, but he'll do a job and won't necessarily let you down. But he's not coming in to compete. I'd be very, very surprised if he's coming in to compete for a first-team place ahead of Jose Sarr, regardless of his little mistakes over the last few weeks, which you think 2 weeks off, they've had enough time to coach it out of him a little bit and get rid of this little malaise that he's been on. I just don't see him surpassing him. But we did need someone because Sarkic has looked rusty. Obviously, he hasn't played other than the cup game, so he will do, and he's young. So we needed a bit of experience, and obviously you can't moan, it's the homegrown thing and everything, it ticks every box. But he's not coming in to take the first team place from Sarr. That was my main point behind it all.
I was going to say, does Sarkic class as homegrown?
Yeah.
Anyway, I know, to be fair, he needs football, don't get me wrong, and, you know, Wolves will keep, you know, half an eye in terms of the sellability of Sarkic. I hadn't quite realised that John Ruddy signed for us when he was about 30. In my head, he was like, he's always been 34. Like, even in that championship season, he was like a goalkeeper who was, you know, on the decline rather than signing like, you know, arguably in their pomp. Yeah, so you're right, sure, I don't kind of massively see him, I say, having a huge impact. But again, it's Jaffeau is, I guess, somebody who has at least got a lot of games under his belt at, Matt, I was going to say, at championship level, kind of especially compared to Sarkic. So if something does happen with Sar, you know, he aggravates this wrist injury, there's a better backup option at the very least.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think game time and experience is you know, invaluable. You can't fake that. You can't fake the amount of games that you played in football. And, you know, Bentley, he's done it at albeit championship level. From what people have seen and what you've seen through YouTube, he looks a solid enough goalkeeper as a shot stopper and somebody you can pull off. Some of the saves are a little bit out there. They're a little bit, you know, bizarre. They're a little bit sublime. But it's one of those. It's Sarkic hasn't had the chance of playing because we've had Rui Patricio and we had Jose Sarr. These players who they haven't rotated out enough. And besides the first season that we had in the Prem when we got to the semi, we haven't really gone deep in cup competitions, so we haven't given, you know, Sarkic and Sondergaard and people like that the chance to develop. So having somebody who's already got like 200 games plus under his belt is perfect because, like you say, he can come in, he can play, and there's no pressure because he's been there and he's done it.
Yeah, I think the fact that for me, the difference is that, like, you know, Sarkic, you know, he played what 26 league games for Shrewsbury in 2021-22. He played 23 games for Blues before getting injured. Whereas you compare it to, you know, Dan Bentley, and it's, well, seven full seasons in the Championship, where the least amount of games he played was 33, and all the rest he, you know, 45-45, 43-43, you know, basically he's been a mainstay solid Championship goalkeeper for you know, a big period of his career. And you're right, it's tricky. Big thanks to people on the YouTube comments. We've had one come through from Martin, which, you know, we love a tangent, but do you guys think that Sar will be gone next season?
It's interesting, eh? I mean, it's almost like he's got like a 3-4 months kind of trial now to prove himself, that if he knocks this nonsense away out of his game, then there's no reason to say he wouldn't be here. But he's always had this about him. I mean, when I was talking about him 5 years ago when we signed Rui, and I said, "Oh, why can't we just go and get Jose Sarr?" And then when it finally happened, I said on here that he'll drop a bollock every now and again because that's just what he's like. And last season there was hardly any. And like this season, in the last month or so, it seems to be we've had 18 months worth all in the space of 3 weeks. If he doesn't stop it, then he'll be gone. Because they've already shown with Arsenal that is Gonzalo Guedes that they're not going to piss about. And if you're not going to fit in, you're out the door. And if you're not good enough, you're going to be out the door. So he's got to prove himself. And if he doesn't, then there's no reason why we can't go and get another keeper, and Kelleher would be my number one choice. Absolutely number one choice out of everyone I've seen. 30 million quid, it'd be worth it. And he's younger. So it wouldn't surprise me if his form doesn't pick up that he'll be gone. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I don't see why they'd want to make a decision on that now. With Lopetegui coming in, I think everyone goes onto a clean slate. Everyone gets an opportunity to prove themselves. It's just obvious that Guedes has proved to Lopetegui that he wasn't going to fucking try in the time
in
the month that he was here. So, but with the Jose Sarr situation, you know, he's a pro who's played a lot of games and done, you know, like you say, he drops a bollock occasionally, and it seems to be everyone's looking at him because we need results at the moment, and all eyes are on him. when we're dropping points and we're missing out on important points in big games. But I think you're right, Stu. I think at the end of the season, once he's had these 4 months of like a proving ground and saying, okay, can you actually do what we want you to do, then okay, we'll look at maybe changing it or maybe you stay. But it's a dangerous decision because, you know, we're still in that sort of zone of where we could get relegated. And a goalkeeping mistake or two could lose you 3 points. It could lose you 6 points. And that could be the difference between staying in the league. So, I mean, he must be confident enough in his ability to say, okay, he's enough to go to the end of the season. But there's got to be something there that, you know, that they will be looking. The Kelleher thing that you mentioned, I think that's a lot of money for 30 million. I don't think I'd pay that, but there's not many good options out there, like you say. And they'll want somebody who's homegrown. I think Kelleher probably comes into that. I would have thought being Irish and being at Liverpool as long as he has. And I think they've kind of had the hand forced a little bit with that, with these new homegrown rules, where the slight changes to them. That they will have to look at that, and he's probably the best of the bunch, although probably not the right choice, the perfect choice, should I say.
I mean, you look at the price, though, that they sold Danny Ward to Leicester for 11 million. And if that's Danny Ward going for that money, yeah. I think we've kind of been tricked into a bit of a false economy, really, with when Rui was, what, 16 in the end when we had to pay up for him. And then Sarr was 8. That's stupid money. There's no way if we were in the open market and we didn't have our good friend Mr. Mendes helping us along, that we'd get them players for that money. It just wouldn't happen. So I think that they've proved with what we'll come on to Kuna that they'll pay money when they believe in it, which has been what Jeff Shee said for the last 5 years, to be fair to him. But I think it's one of them positions where you can't, like you just said, Jiffo, you can't scrimp. And if that's the going rate, pay the going rate. I mean, it is worth, either way, it's worth either 10 points for you or losing 10 points the other way if you get a dodgy one. So, in my opinion, I'd if the money was there, I'd spend it on someone who was exceptional playing that way, which I think Kelleher is.
I just don't like paying the Liverpool tax, because for literally, as you've said, they do overprice players who turn out invariably to be duds. For me, and I could reel off a list, including one who has come to Wolves and has been binned, who's like Sarkic, been sent to Stoke. And yeah, I say it. I say it like it's a punishment, because, well, it is. In terms of moving up the pitch, though, Wolves didn't sign that number 9. We didn't sign an out-and-out striker, but we did invest into, I guess, more attacking forward type players in Sarabia and Kuna, as you say. Do you think that links to, I guess, the hypothesis that Wolves' issue isn't necessarily the shooting, but much more on the creating chances side of things? Because you're right, it felt like this year, if we wanted it, we've gone and got it. So the fact that we haven't gone out and got a striker, do you think that means we just didn't want one? Or what do you think the thought process is behind it?
I think that's exactly it. I mean, we don't need to focus on one person getting it. I think if we put all our eggs in one basket, we open ourselves up for a can of worms, like West Ham had done with Danny Ings. You know, he's gone on, he's played less time on the pitch than Sasha Kaladzic, and he's out for a period of time again. I mean, Wolves' biggest problem over the last few years has been an over-reliance on individuals, and Raul Jimenez has in the past has carried the team with goals. So they need to spread it around, and Daniel Potenza has done this season. He's picked up his game. He's starting to chip in with goals and assists. That's the idea with Sarabia. You know, he got 20 plus goals last season in Liga de Portugal. You know, Cunha should, if he gets like 6 in the back end of the season, he's done enough. And that's what they want to do, is they want to get as many goal scorers and be able to score from as many places on the pitch as possible, because that's something that we haven't been able to do. And having that threat and being able to be progressive and be dominant in different areas and being unpredictable is what's going to be the difference between us being successful and staying up and winning our fight for survival, than putting all our eggs in the Danny Ings basket like West Ham have done. I think it's very naive to want to sign the ilk of those players in this sort of situation, because I think you can get burned very easily.
Yeah, there was an excellent tweet that Gully replied to earlier from Jack 2005-21, saying if Lopetegui thought finishing chances was the main issue, his first priority would have been a number 9 in the window. And it's spot on, because how many times we come on here and I've moaned and bitched about the fact that they're all fucking shit and they don't do anything. And you look at them, apart from Pedence, who's turned into some kind of Indian summer in the last 3 months, he hasn't done it either. And you look at the others. Obviously, I'm going to say Adama, because why wouldn't you? Huang doesn't do anything, apart from his running, which is fair enough. But Trincao, flattered to deceive. Obviously, Guedes was a complete waste of time. And then you're going back and you look at players who since Jota left, and we haven't created anything at all. We don't create chances for them to miss. So if they were there and they were being catastrophic chances every week, blasted over the bar, other than a couple of weeks ago with Raul heading over at the end, that was one of the very few that you can actually remember where you think that should have been a goal, because we don't do anything. It's final third. It's been pathetic for best part of 2.5 years since we came back from lockdown. Since Project Restart, it's been diabolically bad. And if we've got players who can actually do stuff now in Kuna and Sarabian, Pedence up in his game as well, and then you look at other players like Matthias, who can drive with a ball, who we haven't had before, that gives you an option there. You've got other players that can cover for him, like in Lamina and Neves doing that kind of work. Or that whole top end of the pitch, from take the defence and keeper away, it's something we haven't had for 2.5 years that now we have got. And if at the end of this season, the strikers who are playing there, obviously Lord Diego is obviously probably not going to be here past the summer, and he's come in and he's more than like a glorified cheerleader, which, like I said a couple of weeks ago, I don't think his influence in getting these Brazilians over the line can be discounted. I think the fact that he's come in with his cheerful attitude and posting Insta videos of the snow in Technol and all this kind of thing, and you think, well, fair play to you. You've kind of embraced it all. You haven't done anything really, but still, if Raul can't do it, then he'll be off and we'll have Fabio to come back and Sasha might have a chance. But then they'll look at it in the summer. And like, if Kuna can't play there up through the middle, then he's got other places to play. He can play as a 10 as well. So I think doing it this way around and giving them a chance to prove themselves in the finishing department is the right way to go. Because like you first said, if we'd signed Danny Ings and none of these others, we'd be in exactly the same boat. Because where's he going to get the chances from?
Yeah, pretty much. As I say, I do have breaking news, though. Kevin McDonald has signed for Exeter City.
That's great news. Given the guy's health problems over the last few years, and you know, he had to drop out from the game for a while. I think it was a problem with his kidneys, I believe.
Mm. Yeah.
It's brilliant. To see him back playing again, you know, that's it's wonderful, because he was a great player and a great servant, and him and Jack Price was a dream midfield at the time. Really enjoyable.
How old is he now? About 35?
Got to be, yeah.
He's getting on a bit. He strikes me as someone who, like, bar the, I was going to say, the illness and the situation he was in, sort of probably be able to sort of still run a midfield at a healthy age. He's 34.
He never had pace anyway, did he? So that's never going to have changed his game, really. So, yeah,
fair play. There is other breaking news, though. It's that Wolves have actually released or termination of a contract, more to a point, of Andreas Sondergaard. I say, in terms of Kevin McDonald, I think it was from Martin in the YouTube comments, his brother gave him his kidney, which is, yeah, I say, must be so tough to say for Sonu, because he was still at the genuine height of his career, and Sonu, you know, was still at that, I was going to say, that Huckabee zone, in terms of being a really solid championship player who obviously was at Fulham and sort of doing that yo-yoing. It sounds silly when Samuel was skipping over the signing as Lamina, because it just feels like a really just good signing where it's gone, you know what, we need an extra body in the midfield. He's got experience in the Premier League. He adds something different. Just brilliant. And from all the bits we've seen of him, he already seems to, again, just offer that something that we just haven't had in that midfield for a bit of a while. But before we take a quick minute, the one I actually want to discuss was Craig Dawson. Now, there was a rumour at the start of the day, which, unless something manic happens in the next, you know, hour and a bit or whatever, of Max Kilman leaving for 40 million to Spurs. But getting in Craig Dawson, do you think that sort of future-proofed the club in case something like that did happen? I mean, it's obviously bullshit. Don't get me wrong. There's never in, not in a month for Sundays is Max Kilman being, you know, no one's buying Max Kilman for £40 million at this point. And I love him.
I think you say future-proofing when the guy's like 30, what is he, 34?
I meant future-proofing in terms of, yeah, like, if somebody, like, for the next 6 months.
Yeah, it just seems every player's got the price, and, like, the whole the Brighton and Arsenal tussle, what is going on there? Is that back on again now? I heard something earlier that it was back on again. Who the hell knows?
But they've signed... But have they literally just signed a midfielder?
Yeah, Jorginho from Chelsea.
Yeah, so why are they spending 90 million on Son, who's paid, you know, less than 20 games or whatever it is in the Premier League? 30 games.
He's a good player. He's a good player, but I don't know. I think it's fear. I think Arsenal is genuine fear that if he gets a one or two injuries, that he's going to slip up and City are going to come riding through on their white horses just to steal the title.
And you got to think as well, if they're signing Jorginho and they go back in for Caicedo as well, they might not have a certain player who's playing in their midfield for them for much longer.
Yes, I was going to say, for the ramifications of it, but there's a very clear reason why they're looking to bolster that midfield.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Dawson. Dawson,
yeah, good lad, good family man.
Yeah, nice guy. Obviously, he's come back for family reasons, obviously. And obviously, you look at the reaction on the West Ham Twitter, and it was devastating. And like I said about the woman who had Mrs. Dawson on the back of her shirt in the club before the game against them. Clear, like almost like a Jody Craddock figure for him. And that's kind of what he seems, just steady pro, and I couldn't. And the amount of goals that he scored, it's more than any of us put together.
Ridiculous, isn't it?
So, if we wanted someone on the end of crosses from set pieces, then we've got him. We don't need a striker. We've only spent 3 million on him. So, who the hell knows? But yeah, it just makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, we've said all season. It seemed Kilman and Collins, however good they are individually, doesn't seem to work together because they're too inexperienced and too quiet, and you need someone in between them or instead of one of them. So it'll be interesting though, because Dawson playing mainly on the right hand side of defence. I can't remember him playing on the left. So you can't see Collins moving to the left side of defence either. So that'll be interesting what happens there, because my feeling was that it's going to be Collins and Dawson straight away, and Kilman will be the one to drop out with Toti. But who plays where then?
Yeah, I think people, I think worry too much about if they're good enough, they play on whatever side, you know. And I think probably they, the lot, you know, Dawson, he could do, he could play anywhere across that. Across that, I know people will look and say, okay, he's played a lot of right back games and he's occupied that space, but with the experience that he's got, you know, he should be able to just slot in and play that left sided centre back. It shouldn't be an issue, really. And you know, with the likes of when Collins was at Burnley, he's probably played there a couple of times as well. I mean, Ben Mee was out a little bit injured last season, so he probably would have covered there, I would have thought. So, I mean, it's not really too much of a massive problem. I know football purists probably would prefer a left-footed left centre-back, but beggars can't be choosers in our situation.
Or inverted, like when we had Bolly playing on the left-hand side.
That was the most bizarre thing in the world.
Right. I think there must have been a game last season where you always had like Bolly on the left, Kilman on the right.
Mm.
That back three, and you know, I enjoyed Kilman playing on the on that other side. And you know, again, that much smarter football minds than me will talk about passing angles and things like that. But you know what? If you're versatile enough and you've got the body positioning to be able to handle it, then I don't think it matters if you're left foot or right footed playing one side or the other. You know, so it'll be interesting to kind of see how it pans out. It potentially gives us a stronger option as well if we go for three at the back as well, you could argue. But I think it's, a really solid signing. And one of the things that Wolves missed, I guess, the first half of the season, and it was through shooting themselves in the foot, was the fact that a lot of leaders did leave the club in the summer. Now, whether that was right or wrong thing to do, and I think there are circumstances behind it, because obviously you had Sayson Rudd, you left on free transfers, and then the whole Cody situation as well. And however much their footballing ability might get covered with transfers, it is sometimes hard to have those leaders step up immediately. And I think that certain players have stepped up to become more senior players in recent weeks anyway. But bringing in the likes of Lamina, who's 30, and the likes of Craig Dawson, and even Dan Bentley, you know, as I said, hopefully he is that replacement for John Ruddy in terms of being a bit of a locker room guy and still give you that quality as well. So, you know, even if they don't necessarily play huge amount of games, if they can just help the likes of Collins and Kilman, if Dawson in that case, just bridge that gap between, I guess, being a young pro to the experienced older head, that's worth the value, in my opinion. You know, so it's a no lose signing, isn't it, Craig Dawson? If it doesn't quite work out, I don't think anyone's, you know, he's not going to make, you know, a blog list of top 10 worst transfer signings by Wolves or whatever, is he? Because that list's long enough anyway, to be honest. But we're going to take a short break afterwards. Just going to talk about the transfer policy as a whole, a couple of interesting signings and ongoings within the league today in the last couple of days, and round it off with a dreaded quiz, guys. We'll see you in a second.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, welcome back, everybody. As we kind of alluded to at the start of the show, it's felt like Wolves have had a plan. And
scary.
It feels so long since I've had to say that. I think probably since Nuno's first season, you could argue, where he was kind of just given you know, very much the keys to Jorge Mendes's, you know, little black book. But it's felt like all the signings have been like really precise. And you could argue it was from the summer as well. And a couple of things fell off the sides with it in terms of injuries and the likes. But there seems to be a lot more joined up thinking at the moment within the club. And I think that's that a certainty and assurance has come back to the fans as well.
Yeah. I think you look at the bit, what they said in the, was it the Gomez one where they talked about how they're planning like a year or 2 years ahead, which we've heard that before. We heard that years ago where they said that they've got a plan. They're planning for the two summers ahead. I think that was under Thelwell, that the infamous 5,000 players quote. So if they are constantly planning ahead, and that's been the through line for years, then they are then clearly the problem was sellers all along, like everyone said. And it's no surprise, is it, that we've got a manager come in who actually knows what he's doing with his own people. And the fact that he didn't know Joe Gomez and that he was instantly convinced by just looking at him and saying, yeah, get this guy in, which again is on the website, it's not hearsay. You think, well, yeah, we have actually got scouts doing an actual proper job, but where's that link been? Why have we been told for 5 years, oh, you can't do any business in January, it's too tough? Well, it's bollocks, isn't it? Because we've got six players in, yeah, in the space of 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's all been lies and dodgy dealings and whatever. And if you, whichever way you want to believe it, is, oh, Sellers was just the mouthpiece, he was the fall guy. Well, he was shit at that as well, because he took it all, and then he was doing the stuff with the tactics board in the stand and all that stuff, and it just got so toxic. Yet we're told before that this plan's always been there. So, and I know someone retweeted it earlier, something from a few years ago, where it might have been last season actually, when Large wanted a striker and midfielder, and all he was allowed to bring in was the players that we brought back in off loan.
Yeah.
And you think, well, clearly that was ridiculous. And if that was him doing his job and balancing the books, which didn't need balancing, by the way, as has been shown, then he was either the worst yes man in the world or he was inept. Either way, we can all hate him for doing what he did. And we've got someone in who knows what they're doing now. The whole backroom staff knows what they're doing. The club seems to be back on track where it was before that moron was appointed. And it's all happy days. And we're 17th in the league. It's unbelievable, yeah. Scenes.
I think you're right. I think you're totally right. And I think it speaks volumes that Mr. Sellers left the club so quickly after Fran Garagaza and the like came into the club. Because the work that Fran's doing in the background and Daniel Lopetegui as well is invaluable. They are guys who know exactly what they're doing. All you have to do is look at what Fran did at Eibar, and you listen to how Julen talks about what his son can do as a scout and a talent identification. These guys, the results are already there. You have the likes of Pablo Sarabia. You know, he's a Spanish international. All right, okay, Adama's played for Spain, but this guy, he's a good player. You can see his talent, his pedigree. And to be able to, as we touched on it earlier, bring in a player like Mario Lemina, who is a very astute signing. You're talking about, in the past sort of a couple of hours, the likes of a Ukrainian international who's 20 years old, is coming in for like £20 million, £120 million for Enzo Fernandez. You know, the likes of Matteo Mudryk for £80 million. it's scary that this is the money being thrown around, and you've got a player who's playing in France, who is probably at the best point in his career and playing the best football in his career, who has played for two Premier League teams, and you bring him in for under £10 million.
Who it also
is exactly what you need.
Who also said in his video with Gemma that he could have signed. They tried to sign him 4 years ago, and he's been on the radar ever since. What the fuck have we been doing?
Yeah, exactly. And that speaks volumes of the guys who've been brought in and doing the backroom stuff. So I do applaud Fran and the team that Huelin have brought in, because they're doing the job.
And within a month of coming in, look, they've sorted all that out, got rid of Dr. Death. He's been fucked off. He ain't going to get a job again. And you look, no, I mean, though, it's like every bad thing about this club all season long. every single thing we've come on here and talked about has been fixed within, what, 2 months of them being here? And it's like, all it took was someone from the outside coming in, and it just to look at the absolute state of everything and rectify it all straight away. Yeah. And this hasn't been like, oh, they got multi-million pound payoffs. They've been sacked. They're sacked. And it's like one of those things, like on mutual consent and whatever. They've been sacked. They were inept. They didn't do the jobs properly, and they're gone. Same with Geddes. Same with everyone. Sellers. It's good, man. It's weird to be positive, and it's weird to be the only one talking about us not being in a relegation fight in the group chat when everyone else is, oh, well, we'll get to 40. No, we'll be fine. We'll be about 13th, 14th. No problem.
Yeah, I mean, if I didn't have severe anxiety, I think I'd join you in that one, but I don't want to put my neck out on that one.
I'm like, I didn't have that crippling depression in the background. No, it's you're right. I know that we're going to be fine. I know that we're not going to get relegated, just because I still believe there's several teams worse than us in the league. But I still struggle to see us putting that big run together where we just get so much breathing. You know, we're still going to be in and around this area of the table in March. And now that's just because of the amount of fixtures and whatever. But I know that month by month, we will, you know, we'll creep that position up. And you're right, Stu, by hopefully May, we will be 14th and we'll be 12 points clear for relegation with, you know, 3 games to go. But that's the aim, isn't it? Just because of our running. Because if we're still in that position somehow going into May, then that's a bit squeaky bum time, but that's a worry for another day. In terms of some of the transfers going on around and about the league today, a couple of interesting ones. I think for big standouts, got to be Matt Doherty going to Atletico Madrid alone.
What a career. Literally, for the boy who started as a painter to end up finishing his career probably in Spain, his last big move, he's done great, isn't he? And he was a great servant here, and you know, we bought him in for peanuts from Bohemians. Mm. And hopefully he goes out there and does as well as Kieran Trippier did. Because I think a lot of the abuse that and stupid comments that are coming from some Wolves fans about Doherty today on social media and his ability as a defender are very short-sighted, because he was a good player for Wolves. Okay, he was inconsistent and his concentration probably wasn't the best at times. And we tried to upgrade on that with Semedo, and we're only probably in the last couple of games really seeing the fruits of that deal. But I don't know, but some people are probably disagree with me on that one. But no, he's done brilliantly. And as I say, good best of luck to him, because it's a great place. And, you know, I think I'd love to be playing in fucking Spain over Tottenham any day. It's a much better situation.
Yeah, exactly. He's kind of got that bit of a jackpot that, you know, Tottenham has that. I'm not going to slag. No, I was going to say Noel's going to sort of pick up on this anyway. Sorry, Spurs Twitter. But, you know, it can be a bit of a toxic mess sometimes. And Matt Doherty can be a bit of a lightning rod sometimes, as he was at here, because of how he comes across as much as anything else. And I've been critical of him previously, and but, you know, by no means was he a terrible player for Wolves. Did he strike lucky and whatever, but, you know, I think it's gonna be really interesting to see how he gets on in Spain, especially how we've seen how Kieran Trippier got on as well. See, we kind of follows a similar model. And I think my thing is, Doherty was such a system player for us. And if you know, if you're playing for Atletico Madrid, they're very system heavy, so they're not going to sign someone who's against the mold, or if they don't think that they can utilize someone of his, you know, what his strengths are, so I think that's going to be a fun one. But they have replaced him with Pedro Porro for, I think it was about 40-odd, 50-odd million, I think it was. It's come to in the end. And again, that's a big Antonio Conte signing a, you know, very nippy wing back.
Very good footballer as well, and probably would have been on the radar of some of the bigger clubs. But like, as you say, it's a lot of money to spend on a defender, and it seems very Tottenham to throw a lot of money in a position like that instead of trying to back up Harry Kane and Son. And I know they got Kulusevski up front, and they've added, but they just don't seem to be any strength in depth, despite bringing the likes of Ivan Perisic in and getting the players that they did in the summer. They always seem to just not have enough. And I don't know what it is. It's just Conte seems to be spending money, and it just seems to be slipping through his fingers.
It's almost hard to see where the money goes. I remember looking at the Spurs lineup. It might be when we beat them last season, to be honest. I appreciate that's like a year ago now. But it's like, if you're still relying on the likes of Ben Davis at this point, and again, fantastic pro, fantastic career and the rest of it. But should he be your starting defender? Should Eric Dier be your starting defender if you're looking to finish in the top four at this rate? And the answer's kind of no, but then you look at who their other options are, and they're all bits of hits and misses if you're not careful. It just, a lot of the time, it just doesn't seem very synced up. There doesn't sort of seem to be that cohesiveness within that team. Whereas, I guess, with Man United, now they've made a couple of, you could call it left field signings, but I don't know, it might be a perception thing, but whenever Ten Hag's made a signing, in particular, you know, the two they've made in the last week, in it feels like there's a thought process behind it, even if, you know, they're not long term signings necessary for a club.
Yeah, and it's about buying into that ethos again, and the worst thing that Man United did in the past couple of years was bring back Ronaldo, because it threw everything that they were doing out the window, and it affected the talisman of that team in Bruno Fernandes. It was visible. It stopped him from being himself. It stopped him from expressing himself on the football pitch. And it's scary. I mean, Ten Hag knows what he likes in a player. He knows how to identify a philosophy. And it's good. And the likes of Marcel Sabitzer, who is at Carrington now doing his medical, doing all this paperwork to sign on loan, he's a good footballer. He is the one who's going to fit that Ten Hag mold of being a hard worker who's fundamentally a very good footballer. Because he wouldn't have gone to Bayern Munich. Brain's gone. But yeah, he wouldn't have gone to Bayern Munich if he wasn't a good footballer, because they just steal everything. As we all know, they steal all the best players who play in Germany. And, you know, he's an Austrian international. He's a very good footballer. So they're, like what we're doing, they are profiling good footballers to come in and fit a philosophy and fit an ethos. And that's what any sane football team would do. And I think that is where I think the likes of like Newcastle have kind of done well. I think they've been lucky in when they brought in players that they've done well, because I don't think they've really fitted in the ethos, and they haven't got an ethos yet. And I think that's kind of what a good manager needs to do. And that's, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Eddie Howe anyway, and even still. And I just don't think these teams are going to be consistently there, because they haven't got this philosophy. And I think that's what Man United are probably doing quite well now.
You know what, Sabitzer reminds me a bit like when they signed Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Yeah, 100%.
Very, very similar kind. Not in terms of similar kind of player, but similar kind of level of experience. Obviously, Schweinsteiger was older, but that kind of consistent performer in the Bundesliga, someone who knows what they're doing, who's more flexible than you think, that's got relatively cheaper than you imagine as well. It's annoying that they've gone back to being sensible again. It's almost like Spurs have took the mantle back of being banter club of the whole league. And they had that whole period where Redknapp kind of made them Champions League regulars and they were playing well with Bale and stuff. And Arsenal kind of took over. But Spurs being banter club, it almost feels like the world's healing again. They're like a high-profile Everton, aren't they? Like Everton with money, Spurs.
Yeah.
I think with what they've done and how they're playing, I think they're top four shoo-ins. I can't see them not getting there, really.
Yeah,
I think that kind of lucky as well this season that Liverpool and Chelsea have been as poor as they have, because it's allowed them to go about their business quite quietly and be consistent. I think there would have been a lot more pressure from the outside if they'd have been pressed against two or three other teams, I think, because they're up against the likes of Newcastle. For that fourth spot in Brighton and people like that, then the hand breaks off a little bit.
I would say it's interesting what you say in terms of sort of especially drop off in Liverpool. And my question was going to be, you know, who are the losers in this transfer window? Because I think some teams have particularly done either a lot of business or shrewd business. And I'd like to think Wolves fall into that category. But, you know, even teams bottom half of the table don't seem to have pulled up many trees. You look at West Ham, who have been on the slide, you get an Ings, decent Wedge, even, you know, gets injured in what was his first training session or something stupid.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, I'd probably say Crystal Palace probably would have been up there as one of the worst as well for the window. But if they can get Gallagher in on loan again, if they've done shrewd. But yeah, I mean, the Liverpool situation is tough. I mean, Fenway Sports Group obviously are looking to sell the club, and they don't want to invest any more money until they've got rid of it. It looks like the sale's getting closer, but they're only hurting their own asset. And if it is the Qatari sports fund who are looking at it to look into buy Liverpool, it's going to devalue them if they ain't in the Champions League, and they'll just wait. They'll say, okay, we'll wait till next season and we'll offer 100 million, 200 million less. And it's a dangerous game they're playing because they've got an aging midfield. You know, Henderson's the wrong side of 30. Keita's the wrong side of 30. I think a few of them are pushing probably in the last 3 or 4 years at the top. You know, it's a dangerous game to play. To let a squad age to the point where you need a complete rebuild. I mean, they're looking at Nunes in the summer, but if they were Bellingham as well, I mean, you're talking the best part of £200 million to rebuild that midfield in the summer. But Chelsea, who else is going to do that? And you need serious investment. But the other one that's just gone through as well is that Felipe has gone to Forest. See their scouts are following our coattails as per usual, or either taking our old castaways or stealing our scout reports.
Yeah.
And there ain't much pace in that defence if they're going to be playing Felipe and Bolly, is there? I mean, Forest are baffling to me. I mean, it's almost like, I mean, I think the squad that they've got now, they'll annoyingly probably be okay anyway without bringing anyone else in. So they've kind of picked up and they've kind of seemed to have gelled, which was always going to take time anyway with what happened in the summer. But I don't understand why they're doing it again. It doesn't make any... It's almost like he's playing Football Manager, the big fat man. I can't remember his name. I saw him the other day when he was on camera in the semi-final last week. And he's almost getting to the size of the Big Barry at Birmingham. He's getting that way. He's going to have about 4 seats to himself soon. It's outrageous. I don't know what's going on. But controversial take: Man City, one of the losers in this transfer window, because the Cancelo thing is it's dodgy how he's just suddenly fell out completely off the face of the earth. Obviously, something's gone on there, and he's put all his faith in that kid. But Cancelo seemed to be one of the dressing room good guys as well. And then you got Bernardo Silva doesn't seem to be playing either. It's like something's going on there, and obviously they're not going to spend money hand over fist anymore, because they probably can't this year after the Grealish stuff last year. But something's not right there. And I know that we were pathetic a couple of weeks ago, and they didn't get out of first gear. But I don't know. Something seems off at Man City. I'll come and put my finger on it.
Do you think it's similar in terms of Liverpool, that, you know, the manager's been there a significant amount of time, and there's arguably bits of rebuild that need to happen in that team? Players are getting older, and it gets a bit fraught. And, you know, say if you've got someone who's, you know, got a strong personality, and, you know, it's a tricky one. And you say, like, just to go, oh, yeah, but it's fine because I've got Rico Lewis, is it?
Yeah.
You know, it's big of, it is really big of Pep to back him. But if there's any coach, I guess, who thinks he can mould and play, it's probably going to be him.
Yeah, it's what... I think, yeah, you look at the way Liverpool handled Mo Salah, and just throwing money at a situation, he's probably a similar sort of thing. He's probably wanting to a new contract. He's probably wanting more money. He's probably wanting to, you know, play all the time. He's wanting to get these demands into place, that he said, okay, fuck him off. Because, like I say, people get stagnant. People kind of get comfortable in their own shoes. And sometimes you've got to be ruthless in football and move people on. And the kid's not done bad, has he, Rico Lewis? Right. And you know, he's been competent, and he's done well. And he's, like you say, if there's Pep will give him the chance, and the coaches that are around him are the best opportunity for him to grow and playing with players that he is. He's gonna improve every week. It's a perfect situation for him and the perfect players for him to grow.
You know, it seems very much like the whole league is like the year Leicester won it, where there's so many teams that are completely dysfunctional or at the end of their cycle. And it's just our luck, that we get caught up as one of them teams, because if this was a year ago, then, literally a year ago when we were pushing for fourth before Hoover messed it all up, you think, well, it's just classic Wolves that it happened this year, and it's and we're shit as well.
Yeah, typical, innit? You say what tends to happen though is you get this sort of funny old season when a couple of the big teams go through a recycle and drop off. Problem is, it doesn't happen all that often, does it? As you sort of mentioned, it only happens like every sort of 6-7 years. I know it's been an interesting transfer window. And so happy that Wolves at least come out the other side of it looking a lot better from when we started. And that's, I think that's all we could ask for, and we definitely have. As well as shifting, as you sort of mentioned, in terms of Guedes and Hoover, some of the dead weight as well. I know you're dreading it, boys, but I have done a quiz. But it's fun. It's going to be a fun quiz. All quizzes are fun, as I keep telling you constantly. 6 questions. Feel free to join in as well, to everyone who's listening, watching live. So, first up, on the 25th of January 2006, Wolves signed the missing piece of the jigsaw, Thomas Frankowski. But who else did Wolves sign that day?
The first one that jumped into my head was Berra, but I don't think that's right at all.
That might be a bit early, mightn't it? Berra.
It was only when I was doing this quiz, I thought, yeah, this is a fun one. Do you want me to tell you the answer? Do you want to guess?
I'll guess it's Sol.
It's the only one.
But who the f-
right, yeah, right back.
Yeah, no idea.
He was a right back who played three games more than Thomas Frankowski. He basically played the back end of that season and then went off to Luton, or he came from Luton. I can't quite remember from my quick Wikipedia grab. Yeah, Scottish. Very tough tackling from memory. I don't know how he didn't get sent off for us. So, question number two. What season was the January transfer window introduced? I literally had this question with Stu in mind because I thought it's going to be the sort of one where you might just go, I know exactly when that is.
I'm trying to think of it because...
I'll just guess because I ain't going to know. So I'll just guess at 96.
No, it's not. Because you had... So you used to have it was March when it was the end of March, like the last 2 months of the season when you could bring players in up until then. I had 2007 in my head, but I think that's too late as well. I'll go 2005.
It was the 2002 to 2003 season.
Damn.
Yeah, because. I was having a look, the year before, we obviously were signing players in 2002. We still were signing players, you're right, in that March time, like Gunnar Haller was a March sign, March signing for the last 2 months of the season. Right, number three, let's whiz through it. Who was Wolves' first signing in a January transfer window?
So it was the year after that. So it was fucking Paul Jones.
Seem quite confident, so I'll let you go with that one. Now you're gonna.
It was Carl Court. Now,
that was the year after. Oh,
yeah. Now, technically, we signed Vio Ganea on a free transfer on New Year's Eve. But I think it was technically classed as a free transfer. So I don't know whether you do class or not, but I think the first actual one that was in that window. But I digress. So Egert Jonsson signed for Wolves in January 2012, but for which football league club, did he make over 50 appearances for after leaving Wolves?
English Football League.
Yeah, English Football League.
Reading? Was he at Reading? Was that Edwards? Oh, my brain's gone.
It's the worst quiz of all time.
It's up there, sorry.
I know.
I'm only joking, Rich. I'm only joking.
A lot of them around that time was in Millwall, were they? After us.
That's sure. But
I don't think he did. I was going to say Brentford, maybe?
It was Fleetwood.
Oh, see, red. That's enough.
Yeah. Okay, so Wolves sold Richard Stearman in a January transfer window. How many goals did he score for Wolves during his time at the club?
Look at seven.
I'll get 20.
He actually scored. Jafo's actually nearest, so I'll give him a point. 5.
No way.
Yes way.
That little. Oh.
Yeah.
I was trying to be conservative. I was shot it.
And last question then, before we wrap up. In Nuno's championship winning season, Wolves sold two players from a January transfer window. Who were they?
See, there's so much shit that we've had. you gotta think of maybe two players sold. I think Price left earlier than that.
I want to say Teixeira, but I think that's maybe not right.
Yeah, because I thought Danny Bath, but he lifted the trophy, didn't he? Even though he didn't play that often. I'm going to say Jack Price is one of them, but I don't think it's right. I think he left a few months earlier than that.
The two were Jack Price and Lee Evans.
Nice one.
Yeah, January 8th for Jack Price and January 10th for Lee Evans. I'm going to wrap up today's show on that wonderful quiz. Let us know, anyone who's listening, how well you did on that. I think that was a perfect quiz, to be honest. I think it just shows your limitations rather than my adult mind and how it works. But you know what? We'll worry about it next time. We'll be back, though, guys, at some point. Big thank you to everybody listening. We'll be back to preview the Liverpool game, probably Friday night, and also to talk about it as well post-game. I say thanks for everyone who's watched it live, today's episode live on YouTube. Make sure you like, share and subscribe, as well as subscribing on podcasts as well. Your support is greatly appreciated as always. Make sure you're following Wolves Fancast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. It's at Wolves Fancast. Very easy and lovely to find. But until next time, it's goodbye from Stu.
Goodbye, everyone. I mean, we are signing off now at 11 minutes past 10 on transfer deadline day. So if anything happens after this, it's not our fault. This is Rich kicking us out at this time of day. So, yeah, goodbye, everyone.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry we're going to miss the Max Kilman going for 40 million in the next 45 minutes.
Yeah. So if Adam Lafondra comes in on a free, it's Rich's fault.
If we sign Gicares, or whatever you say, from Coventry, I'll come on here on my own and talk to you all.
Just after a few more beers.
send me the StreamYard login.
I've got the keys to the castle here. I don't need
them. Even better.
You give me the power.
God help us all. God help us all. It's goodbye from Jaffo.
Yeah, good night, guys.
It's goodbye from me. See you next time, everyone.